This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Extra Points with knowledgeable analysts and exclusive special guests. It's your look at the world of sports through the eyes of Place to Be Nation. And now, your hosts, Scott Criscolo and Dr. G. George Ribolino.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 6 of your home for everything sports. Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. We got a great show for you tonight. Lots of playoffs, lots of draft picks, lots of everything. But of course, I can't do any of it without bringing in my compadre.
Oh, John.
He knows everything you want to know about belts and dogs and leaky basements. But he's also a sports genius. He is the doctor, George Ribolino.
Although the pleasure is all yours, Scott.
But the basement's dry.
Thanks for having me.
But the basement's dry. You're on every week. Thanks for having you. You'd rather have me be gone than have Susan on.
Oh, George!
All right. Doctor's always a pleasure. Before you and I bloviate, let's look ahead to the rest of our program. Coming up in the next segment, Todd Gessling will join us to talk the Stanley Cup playoffs. A couple games tonight. They'll be going on in a little bit. Game 6 from Madison Square Garden, Rangers and Penguins. That series is 3-2 Pittsburgh. And then later tonight, Blackhawks and Wild. That series is tied at 2. And, of course, Bruins, Canadiens, Monday night. So, again, by the time you hear this, this show will be posted on the site on Tuesday. The Penguins and Bruins may already be set for the East Finals. They're both up 3-2. Or we may have a couple of Game 7s this week. And that is Game 7 in Boston and Game 7 in Pittsburgh. So we'll see what happens.
Great playoffs for the NHL and NBA so far.
Yeah, I agree. And the NBA playoffs, we had our man Andrew Reich on our last show. I know there were games tonight. Let me take a quick check here on what is going on in the NBA this evening. Later tonight, if my machine works here. Pacers are in Washington to take on the Wizards, and the Clippers and Thunder playing in Los Angeles this week. Last night, or on Saturday, your Nets survived, leading now down 2-1 to the Heat with a 104-90 win at Barclays. Game 4 is, I think, what, Monday night, right?
Yep, Monday night.
Barclays. I got an interesting question to ask you about the Nets in a minute. And then last night, San Antonio took out Portland, 118-103. God, the Spurs. I can hear my brother bitch and moan. He used to be a Knicks fan. Jumped off the bandwagon so he could get drunk on the Riverwalk. I want to talk.
Your brothers go and they like move to a place and then they start rooting.
Yeah, my brother moved. Teams. My other brother, Jeff, moved to Atlanta or moved to the Atlanta suburbs in the early 90s.
Yeah, conveniently when the Yankees weren't that good.
And the Braves were suddenly great. And incidentally, Dr. G, my brother lived in Conyers. Now, you know what of your favorite TV shows shot in Conyers?
That's In the Heat of the Night.
In the Heat of the Night.
Show.
Yep. In fact, my brother used my brother used to see it shot outside his house. In that neighborhood, he used to see, what was that guy's name? Henry Rollins, right? Was that the black guy? Right, Henry Rollins.
Yep.
Not the guy from Black. Not Henry Rollins, but Henry Rollins. And then who was the other guy? Oh, Carol O'Connor, obviously, and all those other dudes. Anyway,
A lot of the cast is not even alive anymore.
I know. Yeah.
Carol O'Connor, his son, Rollins.
But anyway, my brother moved to the Atlanta burbs in the early 90s. He moved back in 94. Anyway. My question, I wanted to ask you this because I was listening to a local station around here today coming off the Nets win on Saturday night. And this host was talking about, you know, the New York sports teams and the crowds getting into them and the crowds the fan base really getting strong for them. And he said that even at this stage, where the Nets are still in the hunt, still battling the Heat, that they're not getting the juice that they should. They don't have that Nick juice. Not that there's any Nick juice. At least not now, anyway. Do you think that this fan base, a lot of people think it's because the Nets have a lot of guys who, used to be hated in this town, Garnett and Pierce. But do you think that there is truly a juice for the Nets at this point?
I think there is. You got to listen. We know the Nets originally are from New Jersey. They didn't have a great big fan base. They're building. This is their second year in Brooklyn. It's coming along. Is it a Knicks town? Yes. Is it a Yankees town right now and a Giants town? Maybe the Giants and the Jets. I would still say it's a Giants town and the Yankees town. The Nets are never going to have the fan base that the Knicks have. I know that, but I don't really care. Mm-hmm. And the fans that are there, I think they get pretty loud in the Barclays. I'm pretty satisfied with it. I don't know what else people really want. Yeah, of course you're gonna have the Knicks fans out there. Oh, you're gonna have enough Jews like we have. Yeah, so we could be out of the playoffs again. You know, Knicks fans, say what you want. Now, see, I know what it's kind of like now. Maybe how you feel as a Mets fan. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll give you a little sympathy. I guess it kind of gets annoying. Me personally, I don't care, because you know what? Just because you brought Phil Jackson in does not make you a winner right away. Okay, he's not coaching your team first of all, and they got a lot of problems. So I think maybe the Knicks fans maybe need to keep to themselves, worry about their own team, and we'll worry about things here in Brooklyn. And it's going to be tough. I tell you right now, they have to win. They have to win on Monday night. They have to win on Monday night. Mm. They don't win on Monday night, they're done. Mm. There's no way they're going to come back from a 3-1 deficit.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, at least we know what it's like to make it to the second round of the playoffs.
They had 15 threes in that game, too. What about the Spurs, huh? I mean, this is a team – I used to goof with you about the Devils all the time being old. But I tell you, the Spurs just – they just keep on coming, huh? They don't get any older. They keep moving along, and now they're on the verge of going to the Western Conference Finals again. What is it, huh, about that
team?
Well,
first of all, Popovich is one of the best coaches. I would say one of the best coaches in NBA history. He knows how to – his schemes are great. He knows how to manage an older team. It's amazing. I'm shocked, to see that the Spurs are still around. It's, because we're saying, with the Nets, Garnett, Pierce, those guys are getting older. It's one of those things that Jason Kidd had to really juggle this year. Garnett was hurt a lot of the year this year. And, sometimes you see it in some games in the playoffs, boy, it's like they get that fountain of youth. And then some games it's like, oh, my gosh, it's like they didn't show up. Or they just couldn't get out of bed that day. So I think, when it goes to the Spurs, I'm just I'm amazed. They just keep doing it. I wouldn't even be surprised you see them in the finals.
I know.
It's amazing. Mm. But you have to attribute a lot of that to, obviously to the players that they have, but also to Coach Popovich, because he knows how to get the best out of his players, and he knows how to work with he works with what he has and knows how to manage that. And that's an amazing part, especially when you have an older team.
Mm. Yeah. And, he does a great job. And look, the Western Conference is not an easy conference. I mean, although the Spurs were the only team this season to win 60 games in both conferences. And, the West has some great teams: Thunder, the Clippers, the Rockets, Portland, and Golden State, and they weathered that storm. And Popovich, worked his guys, gave them off minutes, and it's amazing. He's one of the best coaches of this generation in any sport. So we'll see how far the Spurs can go if they can. I mean, they were one Ray Allen three away from from avoiding the repeat and from the Heat and winning that the World Championship last year. So, but they're up 3-0 on Portland as we speak.
I would say that they're moving on to the next round.
Yeah, I think they are.
Safe to say.
Safe to say. Quick baseball note. We were planning on having Joel Barnhart, our baseball guy, on for our next show Memorial Day weekend, but he'll be out of town. So I think we may have to do a special show that day, a little special, a little shorter, not as long as we normally do, but maybe we'll do a little special Memorial Day holiday edition because you are easily – And I mince no words about this. You are easily the most patriotic human being I know. So Memorial Day is one of those special holidays for you and I. And maybe we'll do some legendary baseball moments, some American sports moments, Olympics, things like that. We'll think of it. We'll call it something fun.
I was saying to you today, we're marching in the Memorial Day parade here in Norwalk.
You want to do the show while we're walking
with our Knights of Columbus? I was like, let's get it out. Let's just record it as we're walking.
That would be hilarious.
We'll go all the time. Can we even do that?
Well, no, because I don't have a recorder.
I'm not the technology guy of this.
I'm not. I don't have a. Yeah, the recorder's not on my phone, and I'm not lugging this very expensive computer I have. I'm not lugging on my head or whatever. So, but
I got the same computer you do. I finally got it all hooked up today, and I'm loving it.
That's great, isn't it? Beautiful.
I love it.
HP. You have a different model than me. I have a Pavilion 23 all-in-one. I'm not sure what yours is because your power button's on the top. Mine's on the upper left. But in any event, they're awesome computers. Anyway.
It would be neat to be able to do that.
That would be fun. But I don't know if that's feasible. But we'll definitely come up with a fun show in 2 weeks for our next show for Memorial Day. But I know that we usually have Joel Barnhart on every other show, our MLB analyst. But he'll be on vacation. But speaking of baseball, standings are what they are. We really can't talk deep standings for a while anyway, but I wanted your opinion on this because the New York Mets ownership, and this is not just because I'm a fan, this is a general question. The Mets ownership sent a letter out to the fans. They've done this notoriously over the last 5 years. Usually they're pretty stupid and quite desperate. This one, though, really took the cake. I'm not going to get into the words of it. I couldn't find the whole letter on the website, but in essence, Mets ownership is pretty much telling us we're not loyal enough. We're not good. The reason that the team has struggled since 2009, I'll say then because 07 and 08, they had good teams, they just didn't finish. But we haven't had good teams since 2009 because it's our fault. We're not loyal enough. We need to be more. We've got to make the Mets New York's team. Is this a joke? Do you have the nerve to question my loyalty? I've gone to games over the last 5 years, this brand new stadium with 15,000 friggin' people in it for a team that's a piece of garbage. And you've got the nerve, Wilpon family, to actually blame me and my buddy and our buddy Hank and all these other diehard bleed. And look, there's people I know that are Met fans a lot longer than I have. I've only been a Met fan since 82 when I was 9 years old. But you have the nerve to blame all this on us? We're not loyal enough? Could anything be more wrong with this picture? Just sell the team. Just sell them. You don't want to own them. You think you want to own them, but you really don't. You don't care. You don't care about winning. You don't care about putting a team on the field. You care about your image. It's all about image. You want to look good. You don't give a shit if the team sucks or not. But it's all about the family image. It's been that way since the team was bought. We hear these things about DePodesto saying, why do we keep having to hear about the 86 Mets? I'm tired of hearing about the 86 Mets. Well, I'm gonna go to the doctor for the prescription to that ill. That ill is that we keep talking about the 86 Mets. Doctor, what is the two-word prescription?
Well, two words. I got more than two words.
Well, what's the two words? Let me say this. What's the two words you always tell me or that you always tell Jet fans?
Win something.
Win something!
Then you come talk to me.
You want us to stop talking about the 86 Mets? Fine. Let me talk about the 2014 Mets. Or to be fair, 2015 Mets. Because the next year's team will be considerably better. Matt Harvey will be back. By then, Syndergaard and Montero may be in the rotation. There may be some free agents out there if they have any money to spend. Who the hell knows? I'm tired of them crying poor. But instead of telling us, we're doing our best, just stick by us, you've been great with us, thank you, you have the nerve to tell us, we need your loyalty.
Well, you know what the worst part of it all is? I mean,
makes me
sick. Now you took Curtis Granderson, who, I mean, I don't know why he said what he said anyway. I mean, he's trying to say that he didn't say, you know, like real New York fans or Mets fans or whatever. What are we saying? Now they're trying to take his words. So you know he's going to get tortured when he goes to Yankee Stadium on Monday.
I don't think Yankee fans even care.
Because, I mean, to say something like that, but to start blaming the fans, and now you have like Ron Darling's, you know, pissed because he wasn't realizing what, you know, listen, they were, I think some of the old Mets players, yeah, let's, you know, rally for the Subway Series, but I didn't think they were going to send something out like that.
It's despicable. I just don't understand anymore. What this franchise expects. Now there's a lot of crappy franchises in Major League Baseball.
There's ones worse than the Mets. The Cubs
The Cubs are a mess. The Pirates are kind of a mess.
I mean, the Pirates, you know, they've
gotten better.
They've gotten better, but yeah, they've been a mess for 20 something
years. The Twins. I mean, the Pollad family. That guy used to make money and then hide it under his mattress.
That's why
they never made it past the division series. They were a good division series team, but they never spent any money.
But going back to the whole Mets thing, I mean, the thing is that you want to rally your fans, that's great. But to make it like, you know, the fans are not loyal enough. I mean, listen, you can't alienate Mets fans any more than you've already done it. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. I mean, as a true baseball fan that I am, I mean, I feel bad for you because it's and for the Mets fans because you guys are in the number one market. It's tough, like I was saying, as being a Nets fan, you know, we're never going to have the popularity that the Knicks have. I mean, maybe if we won a championship, you'd have a little bit more, but we're never going to be at the Knicks level. Knicks have been around in New York City forever. And, you know, the Nets are only here. This is their second year. But when it comes to the Yankees and the Mets, I just, you know, I understand what you're trying to do, but why throw the fans under the bus? I don't get it.
Worst thing I ever heard in my life.
I don't get it. And then, you know, because I have to say, when I first saw it, I was a little disappointed. You know, and I understand he's more of a Met than he ever was a Yankee, and we get that. You know, I was kind of disappointed in Doc Gooden having his name on something like that because, I mean, I read his book. You know, his book he wrote a few years ago. I mean, he loves George Steinbrenner. I mean, George Steinbrenner gave him numerous amount of chances. And, you know, kind of saved his life a couple of times to come out and then do that. I just thought it was kind of, you know, Bush League. Listen, he's going to be known more for being a Met. Let's you know, even though he's won more championships with the Yankees, but he was way past his prime. He didn't, you know, he had, you know, a couple of great moments, you know, namely his no-hitter. But, and I'd be fine. Listen, he wants to be on the rally of the Mets. That's fine. It's just the way that letter was written just was kind of, you know, just kind of Bush League, I guess, if you really want to put it that way.
It really was. I have to see if I can find it somewhere. But it really pissed me off. I was very upset because I can't believe that, you know, some awful financial decisions with this team. And, you know, it's very hard to spend the kind of money in New York and it's a case in a lot of places. I mean, you got Dodger fans. I mean, their building is Wrigley still is, but it's the third oldest ballpark now in baseball, right?
What's
Dodger
that?
Stadium after Fenway and Fenway and Wrigley. I think Dodger Stadium is the oldest ballpark. Is the third oldest ballpark in baseball? Pretty sure.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and they still get great crowds because they have a winner. I mean, those teams are incredible. I mean, they have some pains in the asses on that team, like Puig and them, and Donnie's the poor bastard he's got to deal with. But, I mean, It's a brand new ballpark. I'm sorry you spent all that money, but you know what? Do something with it. Do something with the team that's in it. Enough's enough now. And now you're going to blame us. That's just the kicker. That's the kicker. I'm going to have to look it up at some point, but switch things up here. You and I, last Sunday, Dr. G, were down in at the Meadowlands at the Izod Center for WWE Extreme Rules. First pay-per-view I've been with you at. Well, no, I was with you last year at WrestleMania 29. First pay-per-view I sat next to you at since... Jesus Christ. When was the last time I was at a pay-per-view with you? Holy crap. It's been a while. You and I couldn't sit together at WrestleMania 29. There were ticket issues thanks to MetLife. But I don't think I've ever sat next to you at a pay-per-view. I think that was the first time. You've seen the pictures on Facebook for those that are friends and on the live chats and everything. What'd you think? What'd you think of the show?
Actually, it was one of the best pay-per-views I've seen live in a long time. Mm. And even watched, whether it be live or on pay-per-view. I thought they did a pretty good job. I thought Monday night, the follow-up was, put me to sleep. But I thought the actual show itself, I thought the crowd was hot the whole night. I just like the way they did. I mean, I have to say the end of the John Cena Bray Wyatt match was very cool.
Mm.
Creepy, but cool.
yeah, the little kid was pretty creepy. I did like the swerve though.
The Kane Daniel Bryan match was pretty cool. I mean, it's funny because these crowds these days are not used to like the Attitude Era where there was always a lot of fighting behind the stage. And when they did first go behind the stage, people started getting antsy and little few boos in the crowd at first. But then on the big screen, I thought that was one of Kane's best matches in years.
Really?
I liked his psychology. I liked the way he worked. I really did think he did a great job. Again, this is not a wrestling show, but I...
No, but you don't get to talk about it much. That's why I want to
I didn't like the way Daniel Bryan was booked the next night, but...
No, you're not the only one. You're actually, from what I've read, you're not the only one of that opinion either. So
it's so funny, and I'll say this, and then we'll talk more about the show, but... It's like, listen, you could say all you want. Vince is still calling the shots. I don't care who's Triple H, Stephanie, whatever you want to say. It seems like he just doesn't want to get a total 100% behind Daniel Bryan. I don't know why. It's just because of his size.
I think that's most of the reason, obviously. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's amazing for as great and smart of a businessman that he is. And a genius that he is, but sometimes he just gets that ego going. And it's like, you got the hottest thing in the business right now.
Yeah.
He had it too with CM Punk last year. It's funny. But anyway, I'll come on one of the other shows to talk about that.
Yeah,
but
I think we would love it.
But the show, we just had a good time. And of course, we had that like black cloud that was following us.
We had to sit in the car with Armento and drinking beers. I was waiting for Claire to come with the vodka, but
the line and Kugels were going down.
They were going very good.
And then we got the what was that? The Dos Equis.
Dos Equis Amber.
Amber. That was very good.
That was very good. Yes,
it was the first time I ever had it. It was very good.
Yeah, first time I had it too. It was very good.
Have a few beers before the show.
Well, obviously, I wish we didn't have rain, but we did see some fine New Jersey fair, if you know what I mean. you can tell where we were. In any event, it was a good show. I'll be my next live show will be June 29th. I'll be up in Boston for Money in the Bank.
I can't make that one, unfortunately. Yeah. But
no, that's all right.
But no, it was great. It was great to see D'Amato, of course.
J. Arsenio D'Amato. Yes, he was there.
We had a few laughs.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. So it's good to see D'Amato.
Obviously, Armento and yourself. We always had a good time.
Yep. Brad Woodling was supposed to join us. He something came up. He wasn't able to join us. But you were missed, Brad. You were missed. All right, we're going to take a break. Here on episode 6 of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. When we come back, we'll be joined by Todd Gessling. We'll talk a little draft, but mostly we'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs as we're in the conference semifinals. series are pretty much in the middle. And then later on, Roger Morissette, the Cowboy, and the Tower himself, Andrew Flanagan, will join us for the entire second half of the show to talk about the NFL draft. It's the Doctor and myself, episode 6 of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. We'll be back after this.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back to Place to Be Nation. Newest episode of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I am Scott Criscolo. The Doctor has stepped aside for a moment. The dog ran away. If he's a Penguins fan, I'd run away too. But he'll be back with us for the next segment. But joining me right now, one of my favorite people. He has been a great contributor to PlaceTobeNation.com, college football, college hoops. But he'll be joining us this evening, as he has so far here in the Extra Point, as our expert NHL analyst, as the Stanley Cup playoffs obviously in full swing. We got a game going on right now, another big game later on, and from the Midwest, wearing his Mizzou stuff. We're going to talk about a Mizzou player shortly. Mr. Todd Gessling. Todd, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
All right, before we get to the Frozen Pond, quick opinion you have, a couple of observations on the NFL draft. We'll have Roger and Andy on in our next segment to really dive in. But what were your thoughts on the draft this weekend?
Well, I guess from a college football standpoint, it really showed, again, how strong the SEC is. They kind of dominated that first round. Everybody wanted to know where Manziel went. I think that it's going to be really interesting to see if he's still around in 5 years. Cause I feel like Oakland and Cleveland were like two places where you kind of just go to disappear. So I'll be interested to see how he turns out. Clowney, I think, is a once-in-a-lifetime pick. Mm-hmm. I know any questions people have about his motor, I still say that the potential is just too great that you just got to take the chance of him flaming out. Just, you can't pass that up. Mm-hmm. I thought that it would have been stupid for Houston to take anybody else with him available. I am not sold on Blake Bortles. I think it's very rare where like the kind of mid-major-ish college football star with all the tools makes it. But it's happened a lot recently. I mean, Joe Flacco and Roethlisberger both kind of came from schools like UCF. So you never know. But I think Jacksonville might have been, you know, they might have served them well to get a guy like Manziel, sell some jerseys. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, the draft is – it is what it is. It's a cool event, but I'm much more into the college football aspect of it. And I kind of hate how many great college football players just get butchered in the draft. You know, guys like Taj Boyd from Clemson or, every year you just got a bunch of great players. Or like my guy, Henry Josie from Missouri, a guy that I just really, really loved watching play on Saturdays. And they just don't have the skills to translate into that next round. But I think there'll be a couple of good sleeper picks. I think Aaron Murray from University of Georgia to Kansas City is a pretty good deal.
I think so too.
And you'll never know just, you know, how it turns out. But, I mean, I'm not nearly as crazy about the draft as seems everyone else is. I'm actually kind of happy that they won't be talking about as much on ESPN for the most part.
Yeah. Do you think that the delay was a big issue because it was two weeks later than normal?
It just made it – it got to the point where, like, that last week before the draft, and you kind of figured, you know, by then it was definitely Clowney going to Houston. No matter how no matter how hard ESPN just made it sound like Manziel had a chance, it was just like, come on. You got a great NBA playoffs going on right now. Mm-hmm. You've got the great NHL playoffs, which I know they'll never talk about, going on right now.
Yeah.
You've got baseball – and, you know, I get the NFL is king, but it's just like, how much more could you talk about?
I know, really. I mean, now it's over, and now it's just the way it is. You know, now the picks have been made, and everybody can just bloviate for a couple months till camp starts, you know?
And about half these guys that you're looking at in that top 30 will never hear from again, or so. You know, that's just how kind of the draft works out.
Yeah, exactly. One more quick question on that before we move on to hockey. Obviously, one of your guys, Michael Sam, drafted in the, I think it was the seventh round by the Rams. What are your thoughts on that? How do you think he'll be going forward?
I think it was a good pick because, you know, Rams are right down the road from Mizzou, about an hour and a half away.
Mm-hmm.
Mizzou has a long history in St. Louis, huge alumni base, I think maybe the biggest in the United States. I think as a pro prospect, he is kind of a tweener. You know, he's not really, hand down lineman, and he's not really athletic enough to be an every down linebacker, but he's got some use in between there. And I really think that there's no way you become the SEC player, a defensive player of the year or co-defensive player of the year without, you know, having some skill.
Right.
You know, as far as the whole, gay player issue, I think that it's great for the NFL. I think it's great for the University of Missouri to say that we had a small part in pro football history.
Mm-hmm.
I think moving forward, it'll become less and less of a big deal if he makes a roster and becomes a normal guy. And I really think in the next 5 or 10 years, that should be the ultimate goal, is that when a player comes up and he's gay, it's not even mentioned. Just like we don't mention Johnny Manziel is straight or Anthony Barr, he has a girlfriend. It's just, it just doesn't matter how they – in regards to how they play football. I think the more players like Michael Sam if you get another guy, especially in a sport like basketball, that kind of breaks some of those boundaries, I think we're all going to be better for it.
Right. All right, so let's transfer from the field to the pond, the NHL playoffs, and a game going on at the moment, Todd, as we speak. They're done through two periods at Madison Square Garden, game 6 of that East semi. Penguins trying to put the Rangers away, got lathered at home on Friday night, and this evening losing again, down 3-1 to the Rangers after two periods. And then later tonight, game 5 from the United Center in Chicago as the Blackhawks will host the Wild, and that series is tied at 2. Home team has won every game in that series. Let's talk about the Blackhawks. They kind of maneuver their way pretty painlessly through the first round. But now they're in a fight with the Wild. They were up 2-0. They won the first two at home and then got blanked in Game 3 and then lost Game 4. How do you think they've played, the defending champs, thus far in the playoffs?
Well, I actually thought that their series with the Blues was the best one out of that first round. I mean, that was freaking brutal. I think Chicago, a lot was hinging on, you know, when they got Taze and Kane back for the postseason, you know, could those guys, you know, those are two, I think Patrick Kane is probably the best American hockey player in the world. And then, you know, Taze's resume speaks for itself. But you never know when you, if you can just plug two guys like that back in, especially when it's all on the line. I think Chicago kind of benefited from St. Louis being St. Louis. You know, they're kind of known like San Jose for putting together an awesome regular season and just coming up short when it counts. I think that the beatdown Chicago gave St. Louis in that last game really carried over into this series against Minnesota. But I will say one of the things that we did predict on our, you know, initial playoff preview a couple weeks ago was Minnesota beating Colorado, which was an upset. But, you know, Colorado kind of limped into the playoffs. I think Minnesota is actually kind of a good dark horse team. I think it's – I don't know if they'll get past Chicago because I think Chicago just has that championship pedigree by now, kind of like Boston. On the other side where no matter how bad it gets, it's really – they've always got a chance. You know, even if Chicago's down, you know, 0-3, I would still say they're not done till they're done, till things over. I think it's just going to be a typical series. The home team is going to win. I still think Chicago makes it all the way, but I got to say I'm actually pretty impressed with Los Angeles right now too. If you're a Chicago Blackhawks fan, I think you got to be a little concerned that your guys have played bad at times. They've been pushed to the limit. But a thing you got to think about in this round of the playoffs is there's no more bad teams. So it's highly unlikely that they were just going to go against a team like Minnesota, who on paper is not at all comparable to Chicago, and just take them out, you know, in four games. So I think this is the time where you see that difference between a team like Chicago and Minnesota, who really has that championship pedigree, who really has what it takes, you know, to look in the face of pressure and make it on that next round.
Speaking of teams down 0-3, you're a Sharks fan. How do you got to be feeling right now? An incredible first three games of that first round series against the Kings and made Jonathan Quick look very mortal. And then all of a sudden, just one. And look, if anybody knows what that feels like, you're talking to them. Happened to me in 2010. You're Patrick Marleau or you're Joe Thornton. What do you got to be thinking right now? That fell off the cliff way too quick. And a good team like San Jose, who finished with 111 points, you got to be pretty low right now.
Well, you got to be low because it's what you're known for. You know, it's kind of like the self-fulfilling prophecy where before the series even started, people already say, no, you know, they are on paper a much better team. They've got, they've got Pavelski, who I think was one of the best players after the Olympics. They got Hurdle, the really young superstar guy. Marleau, proven guy. Thornton, another proven guy. They've got all the talent in the world. They are arch rivals with L.A. because they had a really chippy series last year. So that hurts even worse. Mm. You know, you didn't just lose anybody. You lost to the same team that did it to you last year. So I think it's going to, I think for a team like San Jose that, in California, you really kind of find anything that sticks to get your fan base fired up and staying with you through the good times and the bad. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to win something at some point. You know, they're going to have to at least make the Stanley Cup Finals sometime in the near future if they want to keep people on board. You know, because it's like for everything they do right, it just, you know, coming back, you know, from up or, you know, for like Los Angeles, coming back after you're down 0-3, that's something that you'll probably remember for the rest of your life, even if you're not involved in it. Like, I remember it baseball with the Red Sox. I remember it now with the Kings, even though I'm not a fan of any of those teams. It just doesn't happen that often. It's just brutal for San Jose, especially because people were saying it was going to happen before it even did.
And happened to the Bruins in 2010 when they lost 4 in a row to the Flyers. All right, so let's talk about the series going on at the moment. We'll start with my aforementioned defending Eastern Conference champions. Bruins with a very nice win on Saturday night, 4-2 over the Canadiens, so they're back up 3-2. By the time you hear the show, it'll be up on Tuesday, either the Bruins will have advanced to the East Finals, or there'll be a Game 7 on Wednesday night in Boston. I said going into the series, Todd, that Montreal definitely is the Bruins are not fast skaters. Never have been, never will be. It's not the way they play. The first few games of the series, particularly the first two games, the Bruins decided to let the Canadiens kind of skate around and skate around and skate around, and by the third period, they'll grind them out and win the game. Well, it almost happened in game one. They did come back, force overtime, and Subban hit the slap shot in the second OT. Second game, they were down 3-1 with about 15 minutes left, turned on the Jets, and scored four goals in the last, 11 minutes to win the game. Then Tuesday night, game three, probably the worst game I've seen the Bruins play in a postseason, probably since they got swept, since those four in a row they lost to the Flyers in 2010. They played terrible. Canadians skated very well the whole series, the whole game, never gave the Bruins any footing, and came away with the win. And then Thursday night, grinded out Bruin hockey, and as usual, a kid just called up from Providence, Frazier, pokes home the winner with barely a minute gone by in the OT, and the mojo goes back to the hub, and then they win on Saturday night. First off, did you expect the Canadians to give them this good a series? And are the Bruins in position to win it?
I was actually shocked. Yeah, I picked the Lightning to win in the first round, and I was shocked at how fast the Canadians, laid waste to them. They're kind of the most surprising team right now. I mean, you want to talk about somebody who's making his money? It's PK Subban. That guy is a one man wrecking crew.
Yeah, he is.
And that's as a defenseman. That's not easy to do. And Boston kind of has a defenseman like that too. Chara is an exciting guy to watch. He doesn't just lay back and poke around at the puck. But Subban, he leads the team in goals, assists, and points. For a defenseman, that doesn't happen very often. And he's just a fun player to watch. I mean, he's the kind of guy that you hate if you're not a Montreal fan, but you'd probably love to have him on your team.
Mm-hmm.
I think Boston is in the position to win this series. I don't think they're going to do it in game six. I think that place is just going to be too crazy up north.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it comes back to Boston, there's been times where I've watched Boston in both rounds and thought, oh, here it comes, like the President's Cup curse. The team that that to me is clearly more talented than the rest of the field. And I even think that's true of the West. I think Boston just has too much going for them. They have too much size. They're not fast, like you said, but that size and they have size, they're athletic, and they're great both on attack and laying back on defense. And then Rask is also a pretty great goalie when he's on. I think if it comes back in seven, it'll be not really an indictment on Boston. I think it's just Montreal is better than – they're definitely better than I thought they were. And like I said earlier, in this round of the playoffs, you're not going to beat a team in four games, five games. It's going to go six or seven because everybody at this point really wants that, prize at the end of the tunnel.
Right. On the other side, we have the Rangers and Penguins. And again, game six going on at the moment at the Garden as we speak. And the third period starting shortly with the Rangers leading 3-1. Penguins leading the series 3-2. Had things their way, won the first they split the first two in Pittsburgh. And then the Penguins just dominated the Rangers in two games at the Garden. And then Friday night at the new igloo, the Penguins got shellacked. And they're losing again. Is it that lack of Penguin toughness? They're just not tough, in my opinion. Just not tough. And we saw it last year in the playoffs against Boston. When they need to finish and a team gets in their face, they wither. Letang, not that kind of guy. Crosby, certainly not that kind of guy. We saw him piss and moan through three rounds last year in the playoffs. Rangers have a chance here?
Oh, yeah, they definitely have a chance, especially now that you're seeing the first signs of life from Martin St. Louis and Rick Nash. Two really good players that have just kind of been there, they kind of just going through the motions in New York. I think that New York plays really well to Pittsburgh's weakness. They're a tough team. They're an old-school team. And Pittsburgh is just none of those things. They're fun to watch. They're fast. They've got a lot of really fun and exciting players. But if you punch them in the mouth, they're not really going to punch back. There's something to say about Sidney Crosby's career where he's already won so much at such a young age that when he has these kind of playoff droughts, these past couple of years where he's not showing up, that I think the pressure is magnified because you've already seen him win. If it was still the story of, he's still chasing that in in that cup. You know, maybe he's a little hungrier. But if you're Pittsburgh, do you really have an excuse to be so weak? You got two MVP players. You know, you got Malkin back. He's healthy. And you've got Crosby. Those are two guys that at any given moment should put you above a team like New York. And that's not disrespect to the Rangers. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things I like about the Rangers, but they should not be pushing the Penguins as close to the edge as they are right now.
Mm. And again, as we speak, it's 3-1 Rangers in the as they start the third period at the Garden, and Pittsburgh trying to put that one away. Quickly, on the other side, we've had two teams who can't defend home ice, and that's the Kings and the Ducks. Ducks had the second most points in the league behind the Rangers, behind the Bruins. And the Ducks lost the first two at home, won the next two in L.A., and later on tonight they'll play Game 5 in Anaheim, and that series tied at 2. Your thoughts on that series so far?
Well, I got to say, I was really impressed with the goal. You know, when Hiller went out, the 20-year-old Gibson for Anaheim, he was the first player, you know, he'd put to have a shutout in the past couple of years. So I think anytime you can lose your goaltender like that, especially Hiller is a pretty decent netminder, and Los Angeles isn't the most powerful team on offense in the world, but anytime you can skate away not only with a win but with a pretty convincing 2-0 win like that with a rookie in the net, that bodes pretty well for your roster and your depth. I think Anaheim is I think that they are on paper the most talented team in the conference, but I still think they're going to fall short of Chicago. But I just like watching Los Angeles play because they kind of play that Eastern Conference, you know, really tough, grinded out, defensive-minded style. I mean, I love – if you're an American hockey fan, you got to love a guy like Jonathan Quick.
Right.
I think Kopitar, you know, I think he's one of the most fun players to watch because he can do it on both ends of the ice. He's a really good defensive forward, and he can press forward and score. He can set up the ice really nice for his – other players, and I just can't stand Corey Perry on Anaheim, so it's really hard for me to root for Anaheim. I still think Anaheim is going to take it, but I really think that the Kings have a lot to be proud of this playoff series. I really think that a guy like Kopitar is going to become a big deal the next year or two if he hadn't already.
Right. All right. Well, Todd, been a pleasure. Thank you as always for your insight. It is always welcome here on The Extra Point. We'll have you back on in a few weeks. I know your juices are flowing. I can feel it in your voice.
Oh, yeah.
Spring football is coming, my friend.
Yeah.
And we will talk about our teams, talk about the Irish, talk about the Tigers. I have a feeling a little preview for our future talks. I think the SEC is going to be a lot more another year where it's going to be very well-rounded. I think you're going to see a lot of parity in the SEC again this year. I really do. I think I'm not saying they're weak, but I do think that you're going to see Alabama fall back a little bit. And besides,
well, I think I think it's going to be interesting here in the SEC, and I think the Pac-12 is going to have a really strong season again, mm-hmm. like they did last year. So it'll be an interesting year.
Right. Plus, Nick Saban is Vince McMahon, and Lane Kiffin is Vince Russo.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin might be a genius now that he has somebody having to look over his shoulder and pick and choose. That might actually end up being a coup for Saban and Alabama.
About the only good thing about Lane Kiffin is he can get pretty much anybody he wants to come play for him. I don't know how he does it, and if you're an Alabama fan, you probably don't want to know how he does it. But if one team didn't need an ace recruiter like that, it's Alabama. Because, you know, their helmet sells itself. Kind of
exactly.
Like but, it's going to be an interesting year.
Right. Well, we'll talk down the line, June time, when we'll have you back on, of course, to talk Stanley Cup Finals as well. But we're getting the itch, Todd. The itch needs to be scratched. Todd Gessling with us on The Extra Point. Todd, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
When we come back, we'll be joined by the Cowboy and the Tower.
I tried how many times I cried thinking about mine and where he might be. Remember when I gave everything I got, couldn't get deep down inside.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, well, be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Police Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Show like Oprah, I would be the host of everyday Christmas. Give Travi a wish list. I'd probably pull a Angelina and Brad Pitt and adopt a bunch of babies that ain't never had shit. Give away a few Mercedes, like, yeah, let me have this. And last but not least, grant somebody their last wish. It's been a couple months that I've been single, so you can call me Travi Claus, minus the ho ho.
Welcome back, Police TV Nation. BTBN's Extra Point. My name's Scott Criscolo. I'd like to thank Todd Gessler for joining me to talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup playoffs and a couple of his thoughts on the NFL draft. The Doctor, did you find Buddy Sal? I heard you sprinted full blast down the street.
That dog could run, let me tell you.
He was upset that CeCe's on the DL. I told you he would be.
He's not happy. He's not a happy dog today. 2 out of 3 losing to Milwaukee. Not good.
Not good at all. But we're not talking baseball now. We are going to talk about the big weekend in New York City, and that is the 2014 NFL Draft has ended, all however many rounds it is. And we're going to lay it out for you with the same two awesome gentlemen that joined us on our last show for the preview. They also did a fantastic mock draft piece on PlaceToBeNation.com. By the way, email us, extrapoint@PlaceToBeNation.com. Any questions, comments you have on anything, football, baseball, the doctor's dog, whatever you want, trivia, throw it our way. extrapoint@placetobenation.com. Joining us, he is our MMA stud, one of my favorite people. Maybe some sympathy with Batista now, but who knows? But he is the master of the MMA blitz. No blitz tonight. We want to give him hearty into the draft. We'll have it back in a couple weeks. Big pay-per-view next weekend. He is the cowboy, Roger Morissette. Roger, welcome back.
Hey guys, what's happening? No sympathy wanted here. quick baseball note is Sabathia is probably helping you guys more on the DL than he was.
You're probably right. That's the sad thing.
He'll come back. 60 pounds overweight and win 21 games. So
good to be here, though. Good to be here.
Awesome, Roger. And your cohort, your compadre, as John Sterling says, also wrote the other half of that awesome mock draft you guys did on PlaceToBeNation.com. The Tower himself. Mr. Andy Flanagan. Andy, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
I think it's the first time in the history of the Place to Be Nation you've been on back-to-back shows.
Yeah, I know. I can barely believe it. Such an honor.
It is an honor. I love having you on our shows. Thank you. All right, guys. You did an awesome mock round one draft special on PlaceToBeNation.com, and we're going to talk about the first 10 picks, and we'll go by how you guys did it on the site. Roger, you did the odds. Andy, you did the evens. So we'll talk about those, and then we'll delve into the other stuff. Quarterbacks, Bridgewater, obviously Johnny Manziel, McCarron, Aaron Murray, and even the steal of the draft, Taj Boyd. But let's dive into pick numero uno. And we obviously, the Houston Texans were always, there was a lot of, who knows what was going on there. Were they going to trade the pick? Obviously, they need a quarterback. But we all know who the best player in the country was, and the Texans took him. And that was, of course, South Carolina's Jadeveon Clowney is a Texan. Second defensive player, pick number one since 2006. And ironically, it was the Texans who did it then, too, in 2006 with Mario Williams. We saw what happened there. He had a decent career with the Texans and then, of course, signed as a free agent, I believe, with Buffalo. Raj, you had him on your mock draft, so obviously you're not surprised.
Correct, correct. And just a note about the mock draft was that we weren't predicting who was going to go where. We were putting on our GM hat and saying, who would we take?
Right.
So I would take Clowney. There were rumblings that they were going to trade the pick or take Mac. So when I picked Clowney, my thought was that I wasn't going to be right. But it's good to see it looks like that other stuff was a smokescreen. I believe they actively shopped the pick and just didn't get the offer they were looking for. But Clowney is pretty much can't miss. Seems can't miss. A physical freak. All the stuff about his motor this year. I mean, the NFL, it's a bit of a stupid rule, in my opinion, that he had to go back to college when he would have come out and been number one overall last year. And he knew that, and he played at half speed. I would probably do the same thing with $50 million on the line. But he said all the right stuff, and he's a freak. And him and J.J. Watt on the defensive line, I think it's going to be a short – a short negative run for the Texans. They're, you know, as early as 2 years ago, they were in the playoffs, and I think they have a shot to get back there. And Clowney's going to help immediately. You can't having those two guys on the defensive line is going to be an absolute nightmare for offenses. But you know, within a couple of years, they could have literally the two best defensive linemen in the NFL on the same offense, on the same defensive linemen in the NFL on the same defensive line. So great pick.
Yeah, I think really the Texans, who are they going to go with? The only thing, like you said, maybe they could have made a trade, but and there was some rumblings for that. But they got a good one here. I don't think the Texan fans could complain. They got the best player in the draft.
Agreed.
Now let's go to the number two pick to Andy, Greg Robinson. The Rams to Greg Robinson. I would say that's another easy pick. He'll probably play guard and then move over to tackle. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, I hate to criticize a team for taking a tackle because that's usually the safe pick and that's usually the smart pick too. I think I had him taking Watkins in the mock draft just because, you know, they need to make a decision about whether Sam Bradford's going to be their quarterback in the future pretty soon. And, you know, Robinson, I guess, is a little bit of a project, at least when it comes to pass blocking. I guess I kind of talked myself into Watkins, but I can't complain about Robinson. That was a smart thing to do.
Yeah, especially offensive tackle. You know, those don't come by very easily. So I think they made a good choice there. But I was kind of leaning with you. I thought maybe they would take Watkins. But again, I think they made the right move in the end.
Now, here's a pick where the intrigue began. The number three pick that went to Jacksonville, obviously Blaine Gabbert, not in their future plans. And, of course, they had a myriad of guys to choose from. We all know who the number one guy that everyone thought they'd choose. Instead, they took a chucker, Blake Bortles from Central Florida. Obviously, quarterback was chosen, so the position's not a shock, Raj. You had you-know-who going to Jacksonville. Took Bortles instead. Did that shock you? Were you disappointed? What did you think of that pick?
Yeah, you know, shock. No, nothing shocks me with Jacksonville. Throw that out of the way. But when I put Manziel there, I had the GM hat on. I didn't think they would take him. I thought he was clearly the guy for them for the reasons I stated. And that, you know, their offensive line sucks, and he can create some things with his feet. Their fan base sucks and people don't go to the game, so he's a bit of a marquee attraction. I thought the pick for them, if they didn't take Manziel, which I didn't think that they would, I thought they were going to take Khalil Mack. The fact that they took Bortles, this is just a bad pick. I mean, he couldn't be going into a worse situation because he looks like he has the physical tools. And if you put him in the right situation, he could develop into a good quarterback. So they've already said that they're going to play Henny this year and that Bortles is going to sit. What the hell he's going to learn from Henny other than how to be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL is beyond me. And I mean, I think he's Gabbert 2.0 in that they say one of his issues is that his mechanics break down when he's under pressure. So that was very similar to Gabbert. He's coming from a spread offense in college, at least part-time spread offense. I believe they changed at one point, but where he's throwing a lot of passes within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. That's also like Gabbert. I can't say enough bad things about this pick.
if they liked
Bortles, and Bortles was their guy, which he clearly was. If you look at what Cleveland did, right? Cleveland's yeah. in the four hole. They move down to 4-9, and they get an extra first round pick next year and a fourth round pick for doing that. Manziel didn't go until 22, so Bortles would have most likely been available anywhere in the top 15, where you could have traded this pick to the same team, even if you got the exact same haul from Buffalo that Cleveland did. That's how you build a team. That's how you acquire assets, you acquire multiple picks, especially a team as bad as Jacksonville. One guy is not going to save that franchise. So it's typical Jaguars, mismanagement, drafting the guy too high, probably drafting the wrong guy, and they're writing their ticket to London, as far as I'm concerned. Other than that, I thought it was an excellent pick.
Oh, I could tell. Wow. You would think you were a Jacksonville Jaguar fan.
That's like Batista coming back or something. I don't know.
But you know what? I actually agree with you, Raj. Honestly, to build this franchise is in such disarray. I mean, it would have been smart on their part to trade down, get some picks, get one guy is not going to save this franchise, and certainly Blake Bortles, Bortles isn't going to do that. So.
They could have gotten him anyway, George. They could have traded down, got some picks, and gotten him anyway.
Yeah,
that's the baffling thing.
Yeah, he was. I mean, to me, he's not a number three pick, but it's Jacksonville for you. Now we'll probably be eating our words next year when I throw him for 4,000 yards, right?
No way. No way in hell. Unless it's in the CFL. It's not happening.
So also to the number four pick, Sammy Watkins from Clemson going to the Buffalo Bills. I thought maybe Watkins, like Andy, maybe go to the Rams. But what do you think about this pick for the Bills, Andy? I don't know.
It's an all-in move, which I'm not sure where. I don't know what their self-evaluation is, where they really felt like they were just one player away, that it was worth trading away a first rounder and a fourth rounder next year to move up there.
Yeah.
I could see the thinking because, everyone was saying this was there were four guys in the top tier of this draft and they were stuck, where was it, at nine? So I could see why they'd want to move up and get a difference maker, but I feel like this team has more holes than just one guy.
I agree.
Could use those extra picks. But, I do think Watkins is going to be good. So
I think he's going to be a good player, but like I said, to trade up to me, usually if you're going to do that, you're maybe one, two players away. I think I got more holes than that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's totally defensible. It seems a little irresponsible to be giving up your draft pick for next year, but
exactly.
We'll see.
Like I said, if you're one, two players away,
but they have a second year quarterback. They weren't that great last year. They lost who was the safety they lost?
Jairus Byrd.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's a team that a lot of people thought a couple years ago might have been on the cusp of possibly breaking through in that AFC East, and obviously back to where they've been. I don't know how many skill guys. I mean, the defense, even with Mario Williams, struggled at times last year. Another team that struggles in many positions are almost in that Jaguar spot of the Raiders. They got a lot of holes themselves, and they ended up taking that unheralded guy that everybody talked about, Khalil Mack from Buffalo. Raj, the Raider defense, they had some moments, but I like this pick. I think they needed another guy to shore up that defense. I mean, they do have issues at quarterback, but I don't have a problem with this pick. What about you?
No. If you look at the mock, this is who this is why I would have taken. I had them taking Mack. Like Andy said, it's a it was a clear top four in this draft. The Raiders were picking fifth, but they knew they had Jacksonville in front of them, so they would get one of the top four. And Matt Mack looks like the real deal. Everything you obviously probably a lot of us haven't watched him too much. I didn't tune into the University of Buffalo all that often, but from everything you're reading, he looks like the real deal. Kind of a Von Miller type of guy. He can play in the 3-4 or the 4-3. And they brought in Tuck, which we've talked about before. And when you're the Raiders, a team like the Raiders, a team like the Jaguars, you just want to have as many good players. Any talent that you can add is a big plus. And I think he was clearly the most talented guy on the board, and he's going to make an immediate impact and be a building block for them. So, love the pick for Oakland, and I think they were ecstatic that he was there.
Hmm. All right, well, let's go on to the sixth pick. Jake Matthews going to the Falcons, offensive tackle out of Texas A&M. What do you think, Andy? I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, it's a smart thing to do. Obviously, they would have liked to have gotten Clowney, but offensive line was a big problem for them last year. This is Jake Matthews ready to start right away, I believe. So this is a smart pick for them.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a lot of teams that have offensive line.
Yeah, right.
Going into this draft, weird. So
that's going around, I guess.
And you don't protect your quarterback in this the way this game is being played today. You're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, definitely.
Protection is a big problem. I agree with you, Dr. G. Matt Ryan was chased all over the place last year, and so I think that's a good pick. Clowney would have been nice, but obviously they didn't have enough to give Houston, and I don't know. It's really hard. I mean, a lot of teams are gun shy now to trade your number one pick. I mean, what did the Falcons really? You really got to put a lot into a trade if you're going to get rid of your number one pick. And clearly, the Falcons still didn't have enough. But I think Matthews is a good pick as well.
And the Falcons just did that a couple years ago,
right?
For Julio Jones,
right?
So to do it again and completely mortgage the future again, I don't think would have been a smart
pick. No, not at all. No. Matthews is a good pick. With the seventh pick, Tampa ended up taking probably the second best receiver on the list after Watkins, and that was Mike Evans, another A&M guy. Prevalent college in this draft that you heard a lot about, the Aggies. Raj, with the quarterback situation somewhat stable, maybe not totally, but somewhat stable in Tampa. I think Evans was a good pick. They needed a skill guy. Tampa Bay may be a player or two away, maybe, from competing in that division. You still have a growing Panther team, obviously, and the Saints are always there. Do you like this pick for Evans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, again, in the mock, I picked Evans for them as well. They're going to play McCown. You don't bring Lovie Smith in for a rebuilding project. This kid is big. He's big and he's skilled, and he reminds me of Alshon Jeffrey. And if you think of what McCown did last year with Alshon Jeffrey, he turned him from a good number two receiver into a top 10, receiver in the league, making plays week after week. McCown doesn't mind throwing it up to the big guy.
Right.
And with Vincent Jackson is a really, really good receiver on the other side. And they just had they traded Mike Williams to Buffalo because he had a bunch of off the field stuff this year. And they just had nothing. And Tyquan Underwood signed with Carolina, I believe. So they just had nothing on the other side. So it would have been, three defensive backs on Jackson. So Evans is going to take some heat off of him. And I would disagree. I think they can make the playoffs this year with McCown. I think they have a good young defense, and the margin of error in the NFL is so small, and the difference between the haves and the have-nots is so small that I would actually think of them as a team that could very well win that division and be in the playoffs this year.
Okay.
Interesting. With the number eight pick, Justin Gilbert, the cornerback out of Oklahoma State, going to the Cleveland Browns. I don't know, Andy, what do you think?
It's a little surprising considering their best defender is already a quarterback, and now they're picking up a second one. But I guess, if that's the guy they had rated the highest, it's not a bad thing to have two great cornerbacks. It worked out pretty well for Seattle last year.
I was wondering if they were going to, obviously we know what they wind up doing later. I was wondering if they were going to pick a quarterback in that spot. But I guess if they were able to get the quarterback that they wanted later on, I guess for them, they made the right move.
It certainly worked out for them. They read the draft correctly, that quarterbacks weren't going to go before they could get back into the first round. So
I tell you, it's just amazing. Like every time, I know we've talked about it on the show, just how the game has changed. I mean, it is obviously passing, but just like to have, no big time quarterback, in the first, first round that, that you would say, that guy's going to be number one. Like I said, Blake Bortles. I mean, that's Jacksonville. We'll go back to Roger on that one. But, it's so weird. And then just to see that, no running backs. I mean, it's just,
oh, that's the weirdest thing. Yeah.
I mean, it really is just, sometimes you're just like, wow, how much the game has changed. But, I think Cleveland did a decent job. I mean, like I said, they got what they wanted. And they read,
they picked up some picks along the way too, right?
Yes.
Success for them, right?
They traded down from number four and round pick that's next right. year. They got the Bills, which I mean that could be a top five pick without really surprise anybody. Buffalo's not any good this year.
That's right. Okay, you're right. Oh wow. You know what? They got to do something because the organization's a mess. Maybe not as much of a mess as Jacksonville, but so I think they're going to start heading in the right direction. We'll see how Manziel does though. I know we'll talk about that a little bit later, but we'll see how that goes.
Only Cleveland would draft him and the franchise is turning around and then Josh Gordon gets suspended for the year.
Yes.
It only happens in Cleveland.
Yeah, we'll crap on the Browns a little bit later. This is the Jacksonville tear-up segment. So, the ninth pick got tossed around a lot. It ended up going to Minnesota. It was part of the Buffalo-Cleveland situation. And the Vikings took Anthony Barr, linebacker from UCLA, good player. I saw him a few times this year in that very good Pac-12 schedule, faced top competition. Raj, I like this pick. Minnesota, the Jared Allen situation was kind of up and down the offseason, so I think they wanted to shore up defense a little bit. I like this pick.
Yeah, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Barr, again, I mean, the NFL draft's all about value, right? So maybe Blake Bortles turns into a decent player, but he's not, he wasn't worth the number three pick. And Barr, they could have, in a vacuum, the pick looks really bad because they could have gotten him, again, they could have gotten him probably at 20. I mean, he was not particularly highly thought after. His stock actually was falling leading up to the draft to the point that a lot of people didn't think he was even going to go in the first round. Mm-hmm. So why take him at nine if you don't have to? The fact that they moved decisively and got Bridgewater later makes this pick a little bit more defensible because I think they got good value with Bridgewater and they really needed to address their quarterback situation. But I just think it was too high for Barr. And if you could have traded down it and gotten, you could get the same guy plus some picks later. I don't know why you don't do that. But just my take.
Roger's on fire tonight.
Wow, the Vikings suck too. Yeah. Yeah. Nah, you're probably right. I mean, they probably could have. I mean, what other needs could maybe they have with that pick, Raj? What would you have if you were Minnesota? What would you have done with that pick instead of?
I would have taken either Marcus Donald, the big defensive tackle.
Yeah.
I thought he went too late. I mean, he looks like a Will Fork kind of clone.
I'd have killed the guy.
And if you're looking to shore up the defense, well, now no one's going to be able to run on you for the next 10
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Or even a lineman like Taylor Lewin, I thought would have been a decent pick for them there. Again, though, if they wanted Barr, there were teams willing to trade up. Even if you just get a second round pick or second or third round pick for moving down five or six spots. I mean, that's another asset that the Vikings could use. Mm. So it's not that I think Barr is a terrible player. I just think it was a reach to take him there.
Okay.
And the number 10 pick, Eric Ebron, tight end at North Carolina, goes to the Detroit Lions. I don't know. I think he has a lot of talent. I don't know if this was definitely a need for the Lions. I think they had more pressing needs. But what do you think, Andy?
I guess they've been looking for a second target after Calvin Johnson for what seems like forever.
Yeah.
So I guess from that perspective, it makes sense. And I guess this guy has top 10 talent. So they probably just couldn't pass him up.
And tight ends are an easy thing to come by these days either. So yeah, I guess I can see that to a certain extent. But yeah, it was an interesting pick. I don't you know. I'm not saying I don't totally disagree with it, but I thought maybe they had, you know.
It does seem like they had more pressing needs that they could have addressed there. But I guess, you know, when he is the highest player you have rated, I guess you got to take him.
That's true.
Now, some of the names that we threw out, Rog, you threw out Aaron Donald, and he ended up going, 13 to the Rams. Rams drafted a lot of defense, and we'll talk about another big defensive player they drafted in the next segment. So just kind of backing up what you mentioned a moment ago, you thought 13 was kind of low for him? I was hoping the Cowboys he'd fall at 16. He didn't, obviously, but was that a shock that he was drafted in the teens? Because he was probably the best defensive tackle on the board. So was 13 kind of low for you?
He's definitely the best defensive tackle in the draft.
Yeah.
I don't think. I mean, I had him. I saw him going. Like, I thought the Giants might take him at 12.
Yeah, I didn't think he was
9. I mean, I think it's about where he was supposed to go. It was just a matter of him going. If you would have asked me before the draft if he would go before Barr, I would say for sure. Mm. And Ebron has attitude problems, they say, so he'll fit right in Detroit.
Yeah, so it's probably good the Giants didn't draft him, because they're a team that doesn't put up with attitude problems or attempt not to. Giants drafting Beckham, skill guy. You know, Eli. I thought Eli needed protection on the offensive line more than a skill guy. What'd you think of that pick, Andy?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same board as you. I do think that their receivers, they need to upgrade the receivers, especially with Nick's gone and Nick's being kind of garbage last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, offensive line, I would have liked to see them upgrade that. I really wanted them to take Aaron Donald, actually. Mm. But and there, it seems like there's some redundancy, you know what I mean, between Cruz and Beckham. They're kind of similar players. Mm. Can't say I'm crazy about it. I'm trying to talk myself into it. But
well, I know a lot of Giant fans wanted Ebron, tight end.
Yeah.
Gee, you mentioned it a couple times. You would like to have gotten him. If you're going to get – if they were focusing on a pass catcher, Beckham is – I watched him plenty of times in the SEC, and he's a great receiver for LSU, and they're not known for a boatload of skill guys. They focus on running and defense. So being highlighted to be the 12th pick, that's a big deal for him. I like in that instance, I like the pick. But I thought that maybe the Giants could have used some offensive line help, some blocking. Because let's be honest, all the years, I mean, look, I got frustrated watching Eli not get touched in any Cowboys games or any other divisional games. Yeah. But last year, it was the Eli was touched in years. And that usually leads to a lot of his picks. A lot of his picks also are caused by receivers being stupid and not running right routes. I will defend Eli in that aspect. Eli does not throw a lot of dumb picks, at least not since like the first Super Bowl year. A lot of his picks now are guys running wrong routes, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact he didn't have a lot of time in the pocket. So I was kind of surprised too. I was expecting, if not the tight end, I was expecting Zach Martin from Notre Dame.
That's what I thought actually. Yeah. That was the big.
And he ended up coming.
Buzz going around.
Yep, and he ended up moving down, and the Cowboys took him at 16. I was kind of happy with that pick. Let's talk about our boys' team, guys. Mr. Rosero's Jets, who ended up taking Pryor with the 18 pick. Rog, what do you think of that pick? Free safety for Louisville. Calvin Pryor going to the Jets.
I think it's a good pick for them. I thought they had a really good draft, actually. Pryor's a good player, and I trust their talent evaluators, draft and defense. If you look at the past, I mean, the guy Richardson last year got fairly late, and he was just a beast. And I think, and I fine pick, and I do trust them to drafted defensive guys. And that's obviously a neat position for them. Mm. They were trotting Ed Reed out there last year, you know, with the big fork sticking out of his back. So
yeah.
Pryor will definitely be an upgrade there.
All right. Gentlemen, awesome so far. We're going to take a quick breather. When we come back, we'll delve into some other aspects of the draft. We'll talk about quarterbacks. We've only talked about one so far, and Roger ripped him to shreds. So let's see if the others feel better. Actually, it's his new employer that he ripped into shreds. But we'll talk about, obviously, Mr. Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, McCarron, Murray, all the names that'll be lining up under center for teams this coming fall, or at least holding a clipboard. Place to be Nation's Extra Point. Talking about the draft recap, Scott Criscola, the Doctor, George Rebellino, Roger Morissette, Andy Flanagan. We will continue right after this.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Welcome back. Place to be Nation's Extra Point, NFL Draft Recap, and for the first time in Extra Point history, guests carry over. Well, Joel Barnhart did, but that's because it was a themed show. We did the Major League Baseball preview. Still on the website, placetobenation.com, if you want to listen. Placetobenation.com, your home for everything pop culture, wrestling, sports, music, TV, movies. You got it all. Everybody. We all chip in. Myself, Andy, Roger, he does his MMA pieces. We've got, of course, Dan McGinn and I doing our incredible Legends House recap. Everybody watch that show? I know you do, Jay. Raj, do you watch Legends House?
No, never.
Oh, you have to. Andy, do you watch it?
I don't. But
oh, my God. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. It is an absolute shit show.
If you want to laugh for 45 minutes.
Oh, my God. It is a shit show of the highest degree.
Oh, my Lord.
They were getting their chests waxed and sprayed. Pat Patterson's getting spray tan. Oh my God, it was a complete disaster. But I can't believe it. It's making me. I can't believe this, guys. I'm saying this, and you can see it on the piece this week. This show is actually making me like Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I never thought I could, but he's actually one of my two or three favorite people on this whole show. Maybe because he's the only one who's, believe it or not, relatively normal. I don't know.
That's
anyway,
kind of scary. That's a strong statement.
It is very strong. I know. And he didn't play for the Jaguars. But anyway,
that does make you want to tune in.
Yeah. So anyway, check everything out. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for all pop culture needs. And of course, email the Doctor and I, Extra Point, PlaceToBeNation.com. Anything, trivia, comments, anything you want to add to the show. You want Roger to do a 45-minute MMA blitz? Then it wouldn't be a blitz; it'd be a marathon. If you want Andy on all the time, well, I like having Andy on all the time, so that doesn't matter anyway. But join us for emails with anything you have. ExtraPoint@PlaceToBeNation.com. All right. Let's get back to the NFL draft recap that took place this past weekend. Let's talk about quarterbacks in general. Obviously, when we got to the number three pick, guys, in Jacksonville, the first name that ever that came up, because we couldn't hear enough of him, for God's sakes, was Johnny Manziel. Came out after 2 years. Fell all the way to 22. He reminds me a lot of what happened to Brady Quinn in 2006,
Well, that's not a good start.
When everybody thought he was going, and everybody waited. I remember standing in Mr. Rosero's living room watching that, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, when is he going to go? Oh, my God. Oh, my, wait, we were going to go out. I think we were meeting you, Andy. We're like, oh, my God. When, finally, he went to Cleveland with close to this pick, 22-23. Same thing 7 years later, and there's Johnny Manziel going number 22 to Cleveland. Andy, would you consider this a... We needed Johnny Manziel's talents in Cleveland, or is this what I kind of think it sort of is, which is this team has been a disaster. It was a shit show last year. This offseason's been a mess. Now Josh Gordon, we needed a splash. We needed a face of the franchise. We needed jerseys sold. What are your thoughts on this pick and where Cleveland might have been coming from?
Well, they're clearly cursed when it comes to the quarterback position. Well, yes. I forget the exact numbers, but it's like 20-something starting quarterbacks since the franchise came back.
Yeah, 1999. And a lot of guys that you thought were great, too. Tim Couch.
It all started with Tim Couch was great?
It all started with Tim Couch. Well, he was great. Another guy was great in college. Couch was I think he finished top 10 of the Heisman. He got Kentucky to levels that no one ever thought they would, and then he goes number one, and then we all know what happened after that. But starting with Tim Couch and working your way down – I agree with you on the curse of. But do you think there was a bit of a PR thing there for the Browns?
I guess you could say that. I think it's obviously the team knew that that's the most important position on the team. They don't have anything there. Mm. It seems to me like they identified that they wanted Manziel and then figured out where he was likely to go and got themselves in a good position to land him. I think it was the right move for them. I don't know if he's going to be a success. I guess he's kind of small. People talk about the attitude thing. I don't know if that's going to be a problem or not. Mm-hmm. But I'm optimistic for them. I feel like they were smart and they should be rewarded for that. Mm-hmm. And I hope they are.
Well, I mean, they obviously needed something to make the fans smile. I mean, the front office has been a mess. Coaching situation's been a mess. I mean, their starter is now the Cowboys' third string. And Brandon Whedon's playing behind Kyle Orton, who's not even showing up to spring football. So that tells you how important everybody thinks Brandon Whedon is. What do you think of this pick, Raj? What do you think of the PR connection to it? Do you think that – I just got a weird feeling. I'm not saying that – look, Johnny Manziel showed it in college. I watched plenty of his games at A&M. He beat Alabama. He beat a great Alabama team. I have always thought he was too small. He's got a decent arm. He's got a decent NFL arm. He had a great college arm, but a great college arm, you knock it back a notch or two in the pros. Linebackers are bigger. DBs are bigger. They hit harder. Do you think this was a legitimately good pick? Were there other quarterbacks? Teddy Bridgewater? Or do you think this was not just a talent pick, but because the Browns needed something to smile about?
No, I think it was the right pick. I don't think they're, the quick PR bump could very, very quickly turn to shit if they draft the wrong guy. I mean, it's not like they took Tebow,
Right.
And you question the size, but if we look at who just won the Super Bowl, I mean, he's a little guy, right? Russell Wilson. So I think Manziel. I think he's looked at as a high risk pick, but I said this before the draft, and I'll say it again. I mean, I think his floor is like the modern day Doug Flutie, right? And Doug Flutie wasn't a terrible NFL quarterback; he wasn't great, but he led some teams to the playoffs. And I think his ceiling is just what you saw in the Super Bowl this year. I mean, I think he can be every bit as good as Russell Wilson. I think he's good for a team. I think he's kind of ready to play now. I think he's kind of got his own style. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's going to need a ton of seasoning on the bench. I think he's ready to step in. He's ready to play. It really, really hurts him to lose Josh Gordon, who talent-wise could very well be the best receiver in the NFL. But they still have Cameron, and Cameron is one of the top three tight ends in the NFL, and they have a good defense. They don't have a bad offensive line, and they brought in Ben Tate at running back. I think it's a good pick for them, and – again, I mean, I can't imagine him stepping in and being any worse than like a Doug Flutie. Although, given the Browns' history, he'll probably blow out his ACL the first week of the season. But
And it's not like they had nothing. I mean, to talk like they had nothing, I think, is incorrect, because Hoyer was playing very well for them, and he's back. He's back 100%. And he would have been – if they were just looking for a stopgap for a year or two, he's at least as good as a guy like Matt Schaub or Fitzpatrick, guys like that who have starting gigs. I mean, he certainly is twice the player Chad Henne is. So it's not as though they were the cupboard was completely bare at quarterback. I think they wanted Manziel. I think if they were Jacksonville, they would have just taken him fourth. But they worked it well. They got some picks. They still got their guy at 22. And I'm a fan of the kid. I think the off the field stuff's a little overblown. I mean, you know, which he was drinking before he was 21. Yep. So was I. Right. I don't think he's a bad kid, and I think he's a fiery kid, and that's going to translate well. Kind of got a little Philip Rivers in him on the field, which I like. I like a guy who cares. So we'll see. But I think he's your rookie of the year.
Wow.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Cowboy with a gutsy pick. I'll come back to you in August. See if it changes your mind at all. But I'm.
I agree. I think they did a good job with it. I mean, the one thing I will say is I think his talent is there. I think the only thing that would affect him is between the ears, if he's like I said, I don't think he's a bad kid, but if he matures, I think he could step right in there right away. But it's just a matter of, is he able to fiery is a good thing, but is he able to keep it in check when he needs to? And if he's able to do that, I think he could I agree with you. I think he could be rookie of the year if he just stays even keeled. I just worry about if he gets too fiery.
Right. My concern is that he's got a little too much RG3 in him, and he's going to start taking on linebackers and get himself hurt. Exactly. I mean, that's a concern, because he's obviously not that big. I think that's another similar comp is RG3. But hopefully, given what happened to RG3, these coaches beat it into his head that, you know, just get out of bounds or slide, Johnny, and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, a guy that on your in your guys' mock draft, Andy, you took Teddy Bridgewater. You thought Cleveland was going to take him fourth, and that was going to be their quarterback as a GM.
Yeah.
And then Teddy Bridgewater went to the Vikings with the last pick in the first round that they traded with Seattle, and took Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I saw Teddy Bridgewater live shred UConn's defense in November. I like him a lot. I think this is a good pick for the Vikings. What do you think?
Yeah, I obviously was really high on him. I think, his fall in the draft is more about teams overthinking it based on a bad pro day, which seems kind of ridiculous. I mean, a couple months ago, he seemed like a can't-miss number one pick, and I don't think he's become a different person since then, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I think this was a good move by Minnesota to trade up and get him before Houston could, who was probably the only other team that was looking at a quarterback at that point.
Yeah, true. Now, and then they would end up taking, when they started the second round, they'd end up taking a guard anyway. The Texans, yeah. So another quarterback question. Two guys that I like a lot, and I watched a lot of them in college because my being close to CBS Sports and their deal with the SEC, I watched a lot of two guys, Aaron Murray and A.J. McCarron. I watched A.J. McCarron tear Notre Dame to bits in last year's, or 2 years ago, I guess, national championship. And I thought that Notre Dame defense was awesome. And he treated them like they were, you know, a high school team. They went in, I think it was a fourth round, third or fourth round, back-to-back. McCarron went to – wait, let me get this right. Murray went to Kansas City.
Fifth round.
Murray went to Kansas City. Let me see if I get this right. Murray went to Kansas City, McCarron, and then McCarron went to the Bengals. So McCarron will be behind another guy that I like that I used to like that Justin likes to tear the crap out of, and that's Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton has his shine has dulled. I admit it. Here's two guys. Now, this is where – the doctor and I get into this discussion about the new kind of quarterback, like a Kaepernick, zone read guy, can run laterally, can run east to west, moves around a lot. Here's two guys who, you know, decent speed, but they're drop back guys. In college, they were two of the biggest winners in the history of college football. A.J. McCarron, I think, lost three games in 4 years. And I think he threw, like, I don't know, four picks. And Aaron Murray, another guy, a big winner in college. But not the kind of guy that a Johnny Manziel is or a Teddy Bridgewater is. They don't really flush themselves out of the pocket much. They're not lateral runners. They got good arms. Raj, why do you think they were drafted so much lower than a Teddy or a... I mean, Johnny Manziel is a different case. But a guy like a Teddy Bridgewater or a... I think they were drafted lower than Taj Boyd. Ha, ha, ha.
No, Boyd went after them. Boyd went in the sixth round.
Damn.
I believe. I could be.
I'm getting a Taj Boyd jersey. I dare Justin to give me crap about that. No, I do like Taj Boyd, but he obviously was drafted where he needed to be. But what do you think about guys like McCarron and Murray, who college resume-wise, see, this fascinates me because, again, I watched them a lot in college, and they were good quarterbacks. But why do they have great leadership skills, which I think is key for a rookie. That's what I used to say about McElroy for the Jets, but we won't get into Jets offensive schemes over the last 4 years. What do you think, Raj? Why do you think those guys who probably had better resumes in college than either a Manziel or a Bridgewater, yet those guys were drafted higher?
I mean, I think to say they had better resumes than Manziel is a little – I mean, neither one of them, I think, really sniffed the Heisman. But I think it's an arm thing, both guys. I think in Murray's case, he's in Kansas City, and I think that Alex Smith is a good – I think he's the ceiling for both of these guys. Neither guy – they're both kind of noodle arms in that they can't make – they have trouble making all the throws. Like, you talk about a guy like Kaepernick, and Kaepernick runs around, but Kaepernick has an absolute rifle attached to his arm.
Yeah.
And if you're a drop back guy, I mean, if you're a drop back guy, you need to have a big arm, or else you're not gonna get picked very high. I think both of these guys fit that game manager mold, that dreaded, you know, you can put him in there and he won't hurt you, kind of a Matt Flynn guy like that, but they don't have the arm strength, or you need to either have a big arm or the mobility, and these guys don't have either. They do have the intangibles, and I think both of them will be good backups. And in McCarron's case, he could probably go in there and do what Dolan's doing, frankly. But I think they got drafted fairly. I think they got drafted where they should have gotten drafted, given their physical tools.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
How'd you feel about Garoppolo, Roger?
As we talked about in the pre-draft podcast, I wasn't about the Patriots planning for the future this year. Yeah. I think the window's closing. I think we already have. When we picked Garoppolo, I thought that we were trading Mallett, because there were rumblings that we were going to trade Mallett, and that made me okay with it. I don't see any reason to have both of those guys on the team, and to waste a second round pick when, especially in a draft that's so deep at receiver, to not take one until the seventh round doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I mean, from what I see of the kid looks good, and there's a good chance that he'll study behind Brady, and the Patriots will be able to. One, I mean, Brady, the clock's ticking. I suppose he could be the quarterback of the future. But I think Brady's probably got a good 4 years left, 4 or 5 years left before he hangs him up. And that's probably too long for Jimmy Garoppolo to sit and wait. So there's a good chance that we'll groom him for a couple of years and then dump him, trade him for another asset in the future, because we're building for the future, even though we have a 36-year-old quarterback.
Houston's team. Let's get back to the Texans for a minute. Obviously, quarterback was a big issue. They end up drafting Tom Savage from Pitt, who I watched a couple times. Okay, not bad quarterback. They were very, you know, defense heavy. They took Clowney. Lewis Nix, Notre Dame, love the guy. Outstanding player.
That was a really good pick.
That's a great pick. Good run stopper. Fast for a tackle. Got Pagan from or Pagan, I think it's Pagan, from Alabama. Couple of running backs in the back end there. Andy, what did you think of Houston's picking as a whole? I think they did pretty good under the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, the caveat here is that they really need a quarterback.
Right.
And, you know, this is a team that's pretty much ready to win now. They weren't, I mean, I know they only won two games last year, but they weren't, the roster is actually pretty good.
Mm.
So I feel like from that perspective, it's kind of a, it's hard to give them a passing grade when they couldn't get a new starter, but it's easy to say that and a lot harder to pull it off, obviously. And as far as I know, Savage is pretty much just a backup from what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly not ready to play now.
Right.
He does have a big arm and they think he could be good in the future. I think they should have addressed quarterback more in free agency. I mean, they seem to really like Fitzpatrick, which just baffles me. There were some other guys available. I mean, he's no worse than Schaub, so if they're fully healthy, they could still make some noise. But I mean, you have a guy like Andre Johnson who's on his last. How much longer is he going to be a top five guy? And and Arian Foster again. I mean, he's nicked up all the time. I don't know. I don't know if they should have addressed it with the draft, or they should have traded the number one pick to get a to get a quarterback, or they could have either. They were talking about trading for Mallett, and I think even he would be probably an upgrade on Fitzpatrick, but alas, it didn't happen.
And two running backs, Dr. G. The Texans took two running backs: Alfred Blue from LSU, Jay Prosh from Auburn. Speaking of running backs, a guy that I liked. Another guy that I liked in college, Andre Williams from BC, going to be wearing giant blue next year. What do you think of that pick, Andy? I like, there's a guy who rushed for almost 2,000 yards. He was top five Heisman. The Giants kind of still play that. And he was a good guy out of the backfield. He caught passes out of the backfield, so Eli has kind of a good third target. What did you think of that pick for the Giants?
It can't hurt. Running back was such a disaster last year, until Andre Brown came back, and now he's gone. They could definitely use the depth, if nothing else.
Well, he's big, he's tough. He wasn't really, I know you were saying, he was kind of non-existent in the passing game last year for BC, so you're not going to get some of that, but I think... Listen, the Giants, so they have a lot of holes, and running back was one of them. But if they were gonna get some, I think this was a good job by them. I'm happy with this pick. I think they had a so-so draft, but I like this pick.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree with the Williams pick. I think, but with him, Rashad Jennings, and possibly Wilson coming back, you turned a position of weakness into at least a position of neutral. So it's always good.
You have such a great way with words, Rod.
You really do.
It was a compliment.
Now, the world champions, already an awesome defense. Their draft was very defense heavy. Took Cassius Marsh from UCLA, took Pierre-Louis from BC. I like the way the Seahawks kind of stayed very consistent. Not much in the way of obviously they don't need any quarterback issues. Draft a couple wide receivers. They did draft a couple wide receivers: Richardson from Colorado and Norwood from Alabama. Raj, how do you think the Seahawks did as a world championship team? A lot of low picks. What do you think overall the way they did?
They did fine. I think they drafted for need for the most part.
Mm.
A couple of reaches. I think they took Richardson over Marquise Lee. Right.
Really?
Right, yeah, because Lee went. I might be wrong about that. Let's make sure.
He went
here.
39.
Is that how high he went? Is that where he went? 39. Wow.
Okay, then they didn't take Richardson above Lee, but they traded. They traded down. Right. They traded down when they could have taken Marquise Lee, and then traded down and took Paul Richardson. I think Lee is a really, really good receiver, and I think he could, especially on a team where he's not going to have to just step in and be the man, where he can just be a complimentary piece to start. I think he would have been a good, I think he'd probably be a little more ready to contribute right now than a guy like Richardson. But overall, I think the Seahawks did a good job in addressing their needs. I mean, they didn't pick until pick 45. So, you know, you're not going to generally hit a bunch of home runs there, but they addressed their needs.
Well, Marquise Lee did get drafted by the Jags, so we'll never see him again. So maybe they'll make some jerseys, and then he'll vanish off the face of the earth.
You're not buying a stock in Bortles' Lee connection there?
Bortles to Lee? I don't even know who the play-by-play guy
Lee.
Is.
I like Lee. You never know, guys. You know, just because I thought Bortles was a bad pick at three, I mean, he could end up being...
Yeah, that's fair. It's really more about where they took him than it is about the player.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, I think Lee is a great pick at 39. But if they would have taken him third, I would have blasted it. Right?
Yeah. A couple other quick notes on team drafts. Now, the Broncos, your defending AFC champions, they didn't have a lot of picks. They only had six total. They didn't do too bad. They did get Latimer from Indiana, Bradley Roby from Ohio State, a corner. They didn't do that bad. Didn't need much in the way of skill. Obviously, defense they took care of in spades in the free agency when they signed DeMarcus Ware. And I think the Cowboys tried to fill that hole. I think Aaron Donald would have done that, but he was gone by then. I feel a little miffed that they didn't really research whether the Rams were thinking of that pick. Not that I dislike Zach Martin. I love that pick, but I think defense was the key. That's why all those Manziel Cowboy rumors just were so nauseating. I just never – I just couldn't – I don't get that.
Johnny Manziel was – I wasn't sure if it was going to
– No. Johnny Manziel's not going to – is not going to – they gave up
– much.
They gave up the third most point yards in the history of the league.
Yeah.
6,645 yards, I think was the exact number I saw like 100 times on NFL Network. And Johnny Manziel would have what? Stopped that? I mean, no. That was bad.
They almost took him, Scott. I'm telling you. I think Jerry Jones had to.
Jerry Jones is more worried about booking. That's because Jerry Jones is more worried about booking WrestleMania 32. That's all he cares about right now. He doesn't give a shit about the team that's playing on there. But anyway, that's another issue for another day. Overall, just observations of the draft before we go. Andy, just after watching all 3 days, anything, just general observations of teams, picks in general as the weekend has now ended?
It was good to see Cleveland do the smart thing, trying to get more picks instead of just taking the player they wanted up to there at four. Mm-hmm. I think Buffalo is the one I'm the most kind of surprised by. Like I said, I don't think they were just one player away. It's a kind of a weird all-in move for them to be making.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
Okay. Yeah. Raj? Any observations of the weekend in general?
Yeah, there are a couple. I know I've been a bit negative so far on the podcast.
Well, you spend every comment about the Jag. No one's ever talked more about Jacksonville ever on any show than you do.
There were a couple of picks that I'd like to just skill position guys. I thought Cooks to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
Great, great pick for them. They traded up to get him, and they lost Sproles, and they lost Lance Moore, and Colston's getting old, and this kid is absolutely electric, and he is going to be good in the slot for them, and he's going to keep an eye on him this year. I thought that was a fantastic pick. As far as other quarterbacks, I like Derek Carr to Oakland. I thought Oakland actually surprisingly did a really good job in this draft. I think Carr was sullied a little bit by his last name and his brother. And I think Oakland, that was a good pick for them there, good value. And Logan Thomas, I believe, was the next quarterback taken. He went to Arizona, and he's a project. If I was Arizona, I would have taken a quarterback sooner. I would have taken probably whoever they liked, either Manziel or Bridgewater or Carr. They traded the pick to New Orleans at 20. They're a team that's I lived out there for a while, so I'm very familiar with them. They're a team that's very much built for the now. I mean, they have Larry Fitzgerald. Their defense is very, very good, and they're in a tough division. But I mean, they were very good last year, and I think.
Carson Palmer sort of holds them back a little bit, and God forbid he were to go down, they have we've seen the Lindleys of the world, just the worst quarterbacks in the league that they throw out there. I think that they should have addressed it earlier and picking a project. Well, I think Thomas could end up being good. He's definitely not going to be ready for at least 2 years. So if I were them, I would have probably gone Bridgewater, Manziel, or Carr at 20. And again, the Raiders. Raiders had a great draft. The Jets, I thought, had a very good draft, filled a lot of needs, and drafted a bunch of good players. And I like the Niners. I mean, the Niners—they have so many picks. I mean, they do it right. They're like the anti-Jaguars in that they're constantly acquiring assets and doing things the right way. And you can see how it pays off. Like, I mean, they got Carlos Hyde, the number one running back in the draft, as the third running back. 52nd round pick, and there's a chance that he plays a big role this year. You know, they're going to get rid of a Michael James. Marcus Lattimore may never make it back, and I think this pick signifies that. Frank Gore's over 30, so that's a great pick there. But I think they always do a great job. But overall, fun couple of days. Always good to debate this stuff.
Absolutely, and now we can sit back and kind of chew on it. And maybe we'll have you guys back in August when camps open, and talk about the season itself. That'll do it for this edition of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. I'd like to thank the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, the Tower of Pain, Andy Flanagan, and, of course, Todd Gessling earlier on. Doctor, I think we're going to do a little Memorial Day special in a couple weeks. You are one of the most patriotic human beings I know, so... we definitely need to do a little Memorial Day fun and games on our next show. So, for the Doctor, for the Tower, for the Cowboy, I'm Scott Piscola. You just kicked the extra points. Have a great couple weeks. We'll talk on Memorial Day.